Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Pin Show,
the smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on the Andy Pin Show, and I'm here with John Clark from Lexington, Kentucky. Hello, John.
Hi, Andy.
I should probably mention that you are an associate professor in communication, essentially, or telecommunications at the University of Kentucky, and a musician, and a frequent guest, dare we say, almost a co-host on the show.
Boy, that's daring to say.
Yeah, why would you take credit for this crap? So, but as a professor of telecom, I got a couple more technology items. We'll do another show before too long that's all technology. And we got to get to the iPhone before this is over here. But this was an interesting item. I doubt if you saw this. This was inside the Beltway stuff. Sam Brownback, of course, is a Republican senator from Kansas running for the presidency. And he got caught in the vice over the immigration bill because he wants to do the right thing, but he also wants to win the presidency. And so one of his aides sent an email. It was an intern sent an email to a large list of people who had contacted him about his position on the bill, and they had a letter, a standard reply. But instead of putting them in the blind copy thing, they put them in the to list, so everyone saw everyone's email ID. And when everybody hit reply to all, they were all sharing their comments about the senator's reply to them. So, you know, if you write to everybody individually, they're not going to do much. But here, they all had replies. And so none of them were that enthused. So here's an example of the email barrage that ensued. Come on, Mr. Brownback, tell us what you've been promised in exchange for your yes vote for amnesty for illegals, wrote Alan Dahl. Thanks for the preview of the man who wants to be president. Your track record doesn't convince me you would enforce any new laws any better than you have with the laws that are on the books now. So it's just, besides the fact you shouldn't be sending out other people's email IDs to everybody else, he created this conversation about himself, or his intern did. So yeah, they learned a valuable lesson about replying.
Well, and it's great that you got an intern to blame that kind of thing on. Lots of times the interns get blamed no matter what, but in this case, it turns out it really was the intern's fault.
Hey, Bill Clinton tried blaming an intern, and it didn't work.
That's right.
Actually, she did it. She was no longer an intern when she went to get her presidential knee pads.
Yeah.
Now, and I don't know if you heard about Mitt Romney's situation, but Pete is after him. Do you hear about Mitt Romney and his dog?
Yeah. Man, I can't believe that he actually said the dog enjoyed riding on the roof of the car.
It goes back more than 20 years. So I think, as with the president, with President Bush, you know, when I was young and foolish, I was young and foolish. And people say, yeah, but you were 40 when you were still drinking.
No kidding. Well, and for that matter, Mitt was certainly, 20 years ago? How old is he?
This was 1983, so he had to be. I was 33 then, so he had to be 38. So yes, he was beyond the age of reason.
Yeah, and he's got his whole family with him in the car. And I can tell you, if I did that to my dog, she would be scared. And you read what happened to the dog too.
The
dog's reaction to this was?
Yes.
We can't really say it on the radio.
Well,
I mean, in the most explicit terms,
we can say
that. I know that my dog would have been scared the same way, if you know what I mean.
Doo-doo-less.
If I had put her on the roof and traveled on interstate.
Yes, he did doo-doo all over it. Now, Mitt claims, in Mitt's defense, he said the dog liked it up there so much that when they went on other trips, the dog would jump into the cage that was up on top of the roof. That's how much he liked it. That was the claim. But by the same token, of course, you're talking about the fact that the dog may have had diarrhea, but certainly Mitt had to hose down both the dog and the car. I guess then you can dry him in the window, so that's good.
Well, I don't know. Maybe the dog learned to love it, but I think probably the initial experience. Can you imagine traveling on the interstate with those semis going by you like that? And you're going, 75 miles an hour? No, I think that was a horrible thing to do.
In
but
any
you remember
case.
Lyndon Johnson got criticized for lifting his beagles. Weren't they beagles?
By the ears.
Yeah, lifting his beagles off the ground by their ears.
Well, but see, the reason he got criticized is they have a picture of it preserved for our posterior. Whereas if they had a picture of Mitt's dog doing doo-doo all over the roof, he'd never live it down.
He may never. This is a an animal, a pet-conscious society that we live in nowadays.
Well, speaking of pets, there's new research on cats. Now, John, I need to tell my audience and you, I lost one of my cats 2 weeks ago, had to put her to sleep. She had a cancer, and that was...
I didn't know that.
That was Lexi, who I got in... who was born on a horse farm in Lexington, Kentucky, and I got out in Lexington. And she passed away 2 weeks ago. And because my other one's alone... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say I'm sorry about that. I've known that cat for many years.
Thank you. I didn't bring it up to you know, go for sympathy or anything, but it's good to acknowledge that. But I have already gone out and gotten a little kitten to keep Nutmeg, my cat that I got here in D.C., company.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's 6 years old, and as Lexi got weaker and lost weight over the last few months, she has not been much of a companion. So Nutmeg's been by herself pretty much for months. So I now have a new kitten in the house named Ginger, and... There's a piece
Ginger in Nutmeg, huh?
There's a piece in the Washington Post that says that cats that there's new genetic research that suggests that felines domesticated themselves. We didn't domesticate them; they chose us. We didn't choose them. Is the essence of what the research got says.
I read the article about that in the paper one day last week, and it also said that. That cats were domesticated well after dogs were, long time, thousands of years after dogs were domesticated. And apparently, I believe I read this, it was because they, like you just said, they chose to be domesticated.
Well, new research has...
I don't know what that means exactly.
New research has shown that cats are only hang around us because they don't know how to operate a can opener.
Right.
Hey,
and we don't let them out enough, and we take their claws away from them, and all that kind of thing. I think that article also traced their ancestry. They found the cat that they all came from, somewhere in Africa or something like that. I think everything comes from Africa.
I'm sure it's true. Now,
including us.
There's a bill here in Annapolis, not too far from here, that is they're threatening to ban plastic grocery bags. Now, it didn't seem, not that long ago, they were just trying to get us to use plastic grocery bags, and I resisted for a while, and then I discovered they're better for carrying stuff. Now they want us to give them up.
Well, I always liked the paper bags myself because I could get a lot of groceries in two bags and carry them in one trip, and I wind up going back and forth dangling little plastic bags, you know, like a...
Now,
it's
funny you say that because I discovered I resisted plastic as we all did for a while because we resist change, especially at your age. But I found that I can carry much more in plastic. That is, however much they put in the bags, I can carry six of them in one hand, three or four in the other, and still open the door.
Yeah, but again, you know, like I said before, you don't have that kind of, you know, redwood-like physique that I do. And so, you know, if I'm going to, I can carry a lot of weight here, class between those biceps. But I'm being facetious, of course, as you know. Here's the reason I resisted. When I still had the option to opt for paper bags, and I got to tell you, the Kroger where I shop, they don't even have them anymore.
No, that's true. They don't. You have to search for them.
I would always opt for the paper bags because I could recycle them. I mean, they may have come, you had to kill trees. But eventually, you're making bags over again from other bags and not trees. And you could always recycle the paper grocery bags, and you can't recycle the plastic ones.
That's true.
Here in Lexington, they are not recyclable.
Our grocery stores collect them. And no, our grocery stores collect them. You take all your plastic bags back to the grocery store, and they collect them in a big bin. I don't know what they do with them, but they take them off your hands.
I think they probably go dump them in the ocean wherever they can find
dolphins. You know, in fact, with recycling, that is a dilemma. We feel good about recycling, but there have been studies that show in New York City they collect so much newspaper they can't actually recycle it all. Some of it ends up just being thrown out. A lot of it does. Now, aluminum is valuable, so any aluminum cans you recycle are reprocessed. But glass is marginal. Paper is very marginal.
Yeah, well, we just had another case of a guy here in eastern Kentucky, rural Kentucky, dying last week because he was trying to recycle a live electric wire. That happens all the time in this state. People climb poles and try to chop out a big chunk of wire because copper goes for so much money.
Yeah, I heard that happened in Africa. I didn't realize that Kentucky was the third world.
It happened in Russia, but it happens in Kentucky, too.
Hey, on July 1st, yesterday, we have a new law here in Virginia, and they have banned the use of cell phones while driving for teenagers.
For 18 and younger.
18 and younger, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 15, 16, and 17-year-olds cannot talk on the phone. They cannot send text messages or snap photos while driving. That's true. You can't even use a hands-free device in this case, which is the out that all the adults get in every city or county or state that's passed it, right? They always say, oh, it's banned. Like in D.C., it's banned, but you can drive hands-free as long as you got a hands-free device.
And I think that's so crazy, too, because the research clearly shows that it's not a matter of coordination, but just a matter of the conversation that makes it four times as likely for you to have an accident.
Not to mention the fact some people are looking up and dialing numbers.
Yeah, there's that. There's that. But I think the research is pretty clear that it's just the distraction itself of the conversation.
I agree with you.
Creates the hazard, because this stuff never happened with playing with the radio or lighting cigarettes or something like that. I'm sure that a few wrecks happened because of that, but not with the prevalency. I still have very clear memories of a guy on a phone driving over a curb, blowing out two tires on his car and chasing my brother-in-law and me into an island in a parking lot, because he was having such an animated argument on the phone that he completely missed his turn and drove over the sidewalk and almost killed us.
Wow.
And it was really crazy to watch him coming straight at us. He was coming straight at us. Was so involved in the argument on the phone that he didn't even know what he was doing and that he was about to kill us.
Yeah. I had somebody rear-end me at much lower speeds, just in normal traffic, and I got a police report on it, because I've learned over the years you're always better off getting documentation. People change their stories afterwards, even though they sound sincere when they hit you. And while we were waiting for the police officer to arrive, it was a young kid, about 25, his first accident ever, he said, and I just said to him, I said, hey, I just am curious. I said, I've done cell phone research before, and I have no interest in reporting this, but were you by any chance on your cell phone? He said, yeah, I was. Now, he probably was stupid to admit it to me, but I didn't report that, and the cop didn't ask. But he rear-ended me at a slow speed because he was talking on the phone.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is a question that the cops are asking nowadays. I know you've got to go for a break shortly, but I have one question that I want to ask you, and I'm hoping that you can jog my memory. I was looking through the dates today in history that you sent me, and I ran across the one that today, on this day in 1980, U.S. President Jimmy Carter reinstated draft registration for males 18 years of age.
Right.
And I was thinking about this, and of course, I graduated from high school and turned 18 in 1975. And at that time, nobody had been drafted for Vietnam for at least a couple of 3 years, but the registration for the draft was still going on. And it ended maybe 3 or 4 months before I turned 18. And of course, I had a number of friends who had to register and had high numbers, and everybody was glad that nobody had to go. So there, that ended in 74, 75, something like that. And I was doing my best to remember why Jimmy Carter reinstated registration for the draft, and I could not pull it out of my head.
I saw that date there.
What was going on in 1980?
this is, I can tell you exactly what was going on. Leonid Brezhnev and the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, shocked Carter. He was accused of being weak on defense, as Republicans always accuse Democrats, and Ronald Reagan was challenging him for the presidency in 1980. So Carter this was a way to look tough without being tough.
Is that really all there is to it?
I'm making it up as we talk here, but I think it's got to be it. I mean, I always think Jimmy Carter gets a bit of the short shrift. I don't think he will from now on. It's going to be hard to call him the worst president in recent memory anymore.
Do you think it had anything to do with the hostage situation in Iran?
All of it, probably. But the hostage situation had been going on a while. I think that people thought the Soviet Union was... when they went into Afghanistan, Carter was shaken. He gave a press conference in which he said, I really didn't think they'd do something like this. Not I trusted him, but he was a little shocked at the Soviets' brazenness. Of course, It turns out that I think is more than Reagan's buildup. I think the losses in Afghanistan helped to decimate the Soviet military.
Oh, they were humiliated by their 10 years there.
And, of course, we gave the Stinger missiles to the Mujahideen, and that's what turned the tide over there. So they lost a lot of soldiers, and a lot of families were saying, this is not worth the price in blood and treasure. Well, you're right. We do need to take a break. So we are going to do that in just a moment here. And when we come back... Oh, I don't know. John, we should possibly move on to something more substantive. I don't know if we need to go into politics yet, or should we stick with the common news? The Paris Hilton approach to the news is what I like to call it.
Oh, please. Well, we might do another segment on the general news and then devote some time to some heavier social and political issues.
We'll wing it.
Okay.
Look at all the angry people. Look at all the angry people. Richard B. Cheney swears that Pat lay in public like so much hot air. Insists he and Bush care, waits for the weapons, still thinks Iraq was a threat to the U.S. homeland. I can't understand all the Bush appointees. Where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Rabbit and Coulter, writing the words to a book that reflects a strange fear. Who would come near? Look at her whining, blaming opponents and damning up dubious foes. Is it for show? All the right-wing parrots, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Look at all the angry people. Look at all the angry people. Ambassador Bolton hates the UN, but now he is a part of it all. He's got some gall, push the divider, renominates striking charges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone, all the angry people, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong?
Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show, and John, I saw two events, I guess we'd call them, this weekend. I saw Sicko, the movie, and Bodies, the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
And they're related.
So,
They're kind of related.
Which one was more animated?
Well, Sicko got a standing ovation at the end.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, it was interesting. Not, I don't mean standing, sorry. It, the audience broke into spontaneous applause at the end.
Hmm.
He cracked a joke about the government and then and then faded to credits real quickly.
Right.
And it got a spontaneous applause. But you don't usually see that in the movie theater.
True.
For those
but,
of you,
you know, he shamelessly employed a cheap tactic at the end, and people responded to it.
Oh, he shamelessly employed cheap tactics throughout. So yeah. For those of you who do not know, Sicko is Michael Moore's new movie about healthcare in this country. And I guess we'll start there. So we won't go into it in detail because I know you haven't seen it yet. But
yeah, I thought it was we had some plans, but apparently it was not released in some markets this weekend, and I didn't get an opportunity to see it.
You know, those 20%ers on the left like Moore probably think it's a conspiracy, you know.
Well, he doesn't know our city too well, or he would have known there would be plenty of supporters
for
the movie here.
No, this is an aside, but Michael Savage is part of the Holy BS crowd. Holy is H-O-L-I, Hannity, O'Reilly, Limbaugh, Ingram, and the BS is Bortz and Savage. These are six of the top 10 radio talk show hosts on the right. And 20%ers, as you know, are conspiracy theorists. So Michael Moore is a conspiracy theorist.
Yep.
And he showed it in previous movies. But also, Michael Savage recently went after C-SPAN, of all things. Michael Savage won the First Amendment Award at the Talkers New Media Convention. That's the radio talk show convention. I've told you, I've gone to that a couple of times.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go this year, but Michael Savage won the award. So I didn't know about this. I didn't read about it. I didn't go to the conference. And then he goes on the air and he's telling his listeners, I'm tuning in like a sap to Michael Savage at night to find out what the far right is waxing about. And
yeah.
He says...
By the way, I don't think he's too good. But anyway, go ahead.
He's got a PhD and he brags about the fact he's the only literate and articulate one.
Oh, right.
No, anyway, I agree with you. He's angry and he's And don't get me started. But he gets started. I'm already started. He gets going about C-SPAN and complains that C-SPAN is biased against him. And here he is winning the First Amendment Award, and they came and covered the conference. And when he went to give his speech, they folded up their cameras and left and didn't show it. And so he had his listeners write in, and C-SPAN's getting all this angry misspelled letters, emails,
right.
And so I'm watching C-SPAN, and there's Brian Lamb going through these. And by the way, Brian Lamb has a connection to the communication department at George Mason, but he's going through these letters that they've written in, and they're all Michael Savage on the air when I heard him was claiming that C-SPAN is taxpayer funded, and here they are slighting him, and they must be scared of him, and that they folded up their cameras. Well, Brian Lamb explained patiently, first of all, C-SPAN is not funded by taxes, which you know.
No, it's crazy.
It is an agreement that all the cable systems have to donate a nickel or something from every subscriber to fund public affairs programming, but it's voluntary, and all cable companies do it, I believe. Secondly, he pointed out that C-SPAN only covers live events, and Michael Savage did not tell his listeners that he sent this in on a DVD. And so they don't cover that kind of crap.
No, they don't.
And they said, we sent a letter to him and said, if you're giving this speech live again someplace, we will come out to California to your hometown, and we will put you on the air if it's that important to you, but it has to be live. We don't put your DVD on the air. and then they straightened all that out. But I just thought it was funny. Michael Savage has this conspiracy theory that C-SPAN was dissing him because of who he is.
Well, I know we got to get back to Michael Moore in a second, but speaking of odd behavior, inexplicable behavior from the far conservative side, There's O'Reilly, who, as you said, will not identify himself as a hidebound conservative. And so he takes, obviously he's off, takes the day off every now and then. I'm wondering if he took the day off to write this column that I read in yesterday's Herald Leader. It comes out of the blue. I don't have any idea why there's any reason to do this at this time. But his column is, of course, the Herald Leader titled it, Values Withered in Summer of Love. And so Bill Riley just decides to take off on how things were so conservative during the 60s. He kind of looks back on it as, you know, the wonderful days of the conservative 60s when girls got married if they got pregnant and nobody did drugs even though they all drank a lot of beer. And then here comes the summer of love. And the media glorified the hippies, the rock music, the musicians, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the result is that all of our values have completely disappeared because of the summer of love. And what in the world, I don't know if he had a dream about it or what, or if he just is disgusted that he missed out on it, but that's the subject of his newest column. Well, I couldn't figure out where it came from and what it was supposed to be related to.
So we've talked about this before. The summer of love has been alternately described as the summer of 67, the summer of 68, the summer of 69, right? Depending on what you believe.
Yeah, I think 67, isn't that what it really is?
I agree.
The summer of 67?
Yes, and so I suspect he read an article about the 40th anniversary of the summer of love and decided to do a column about it.
Well, that's probably right.
Now, he is a conspiracy theorist, and he's a big values guy. Like, he single-handedly won the war on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing. And so when you watch what he covers in the course of an evening, he's always looking for the wedge issues, and the, you know, he's a muckraker essentially, and you know, he's trying to do some good, but he's also, you know, pandering for the maximum audience, and so he's always pointing out that the sky is falling.
Yeah, he winds up this column by saying, "You'd never know it by the media, which continues to glorify our permissive culture." But there's little mention of the fact that 70% of African American babies are now born out of wedlock, while the overall birth rate outside of marriage has gone from 8% 40 years ago to 37% today. And, you know, and he makes another, you know, a few more observations
I blame
it all on the summer of 1967.
No, the birth rate, I think you got to blame on Georgia Jefferson and Wheezy.
Well, but then he winds up by saying, "So call me a fogey, but I'm not real nostalgic about the summer of love. I like the music it engendered, but you can have the acid trips and the poor hygiene."
Yeah, I'm sure he's a big fan of the Jimi Hendrix experience.
Right.
Do you know, he says, "I like the music." I still remember, you of course remember the week that Pete Townsend's name was in the news over this child porn sting that happened.
Right.
And
yeah,
he was exonerated is the way I'll summarize it, and I never believed it to begin with because
I didn't either.
I know and love Pete Townsend's work, but O'Reilly that night covered the story. He had somebody on that defends children who are abused, and he was there to say that Pete Townsend, I hate to prejudge, and we don't prejudge on the show, but it looks like this guy's in trouble. He showed no recognition he knew who Pete Townsend even was.
Really?
On that? No. And he had no one on to defend him. And of course, it was too early to defend him, but he had no one on who might make the case to say, you know, when you read his music, where Mick Jagger was singing Sympathy for the Devil, Pete Townsend ends Quadrophenia, his second rock opera, with Love Rain Over Me. You know, somebody could have made the point that Townsend has this goodness streak in him and this talk of God in him.
Mm-hmm.
But so for O'Reilly to say he loves the music it engendered, I suspect he only has a superficial familiarity with it, even though he grew up then.
He probably likes Frankie Valli.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't find any fault with Frankie.
Yeah. Well, not too dangerous subjects, though, in the content of the songs there. By the way, that was a decision that we had to make. My daughter, as you know, my daughter and I were in New York the week before last, and there's just so many shows to choose from. And I mentioned Jersey Boys to her. You know, it's the kind of fictionalized story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And she ruled it out immediately because she just didn't know anything about any doo-wop.
Right.
So we didn't go to that one.
I hear you. Well, look, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to get serious. We haven't talked about the series that the Washington Post did last week on the power that Dick Cheney wields from behind the scenes. We haven't talked about the fact that Richard Lugar, a very respected Republican senator with a lot of foreign policy experience, has broken with Bush on the surge and says it's time to get out of Iraq. We haven't talked about the collapse of the immigration bill. Mm-hmm. And we haven't talked about the situation in Britain with the two bombings that were foiled and then the attack on Glasgow.
Boy, that's a lot.
It is a lot. So we aren't going to get to all of it, but we will get to some of it real soon.